Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Of course, the challenge is, where are you going to get it hosted? That was a challenge I had until a friend of mine recommended Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So if you've always wanted to make a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. And be sure to let me know when you get it started, because I'd love to listen to what you have to create.
Guy Who Knows a Guy Podcast, Episode 10, interview with Adam Simone. Hi, I'm Michael Whitehouse, the host of the Guy Who Knows a Guy podcast, produced by Patrick Howard of Four Unicorns Design. Today's interview is with Adam Simone of Leaf Shave. Leaf Shave is a very innovative local company right here in North Stonington that makes a very unique kind of shaving product that eliminates the need for plastic cartridges and allows you to put the blades directly into a steel razor handle, thus creating less need for waste and also giving you a really nice shave. So please enjoy this interview with Adam Simone.
So I'm here today with Adam Simone of Leaf, which is a new kind of shaving company here in North Stonington. One of those cool little, not tech startup, I guess, but...
Consumer startup
right here in North Stonington, hidden in this little industrial park. So Adam, share a little bit about what you're doing here.
Well, gosh, thanks for having me on. So Leaf Shave is a direct-to-consumer, primarily online company where we make innovative shaving razors. Our goal is to build the most beautiful, modern, plastic-free razors that you can find. And we do that through utilizing old technology and bringing in modern features.
Okay. So what are some of the advantages of it being plastic-free?
Well, A, it's certainly better for the environment. We live in a world where it's not uncommon to see metal straws popping out of reusable tumblers. It's very much in the minds of consumers now that disposable plastic, single-use plastics, are probably not the best way to go for a large amount of items. Straws is a great example. Even locally, we had that referendum in Stonington about plastics and so it's certainly of the time, but not just being of the time. It's really the right thing to do. But the other piece is a all metal tool that is well made is something that can last for a lifetime. And so, from my perspective, I'm always interested in investing in better made products that will last and deliver an elevated experience. And that's what we're building here.
That makes a lot of sense. And so the blades are actually removable individually.
That's right. Yeah, the technology that we've developed, there's a patent pending around this, is the ability to open the razor head up and individually load and or remove blades. It accepts one, two, or three blades. These are classic traditional safety razor blades that like your grandfather might have shaved with. They've been around for 120 years. There's dozens of manufacturers around the world that make them. Really high quality steel. But our innovation is to put them in a head that takes multiple blades and adds a pivoting head. So it shaves like a Mach 3. It's basically a DIY Mach 3.
Nice. And I know with the blades, you have like a disposal box or something that you
when you're done using them, you put them in a blade disposer tin. We sell one on our site. You can use an old food tin can or something like that. And when you've filled your tin can up, you can recycle those blades because it's pure steel, opposed to those disposable cartridges, which are the plastic wrapping around the metal, of which there are at this point probably 3 billion of them thrown away every year in the U.S. It's huge waste.
Now I feel terrible at how should
you should feel terrible.
How do you recycle steel?
So steel is an extremely recyclable material. Many local municipalities do accept them. Not all do, but if yours does, if our users don't, they can send them back to Leaf, and we have a partner, TerraCycle, who will take them and then recycle them and use them as non-virgin steel material.
Oh, nice. Yeah, wait, I know there's this scrap metal, and there's people going through dumpsters all the time pulling out old toasters.
That's right.
Whatnot. So I would assume that people want that.
There's a market.
Want that steel there. And as I was thinking about with the disposal, because I use the Dollar Shave Club razors.
That's right.
Which are the plastic cartridges.
Yeah.
And there's not really a good way to dispose them. So you throw them in the trash.
That's
and
right.
And my wife said at one point that she saw little spots of blood around the bathroom. And I figured out it's because my cat was playing in the trash, because the cat plays in everything, and had probably nicked his paw.
That's probably what happened.
On the cartridge there. So when you're talking about that, that's the thing you don't really think about. You know, how do you dispose? Because it's a little thing.
Yeah.
And you maybe get rid of one a week, but, you know, how many men are throwing out one cartridge a week? You know, billions of them. So how did you come up with this idea?
Well, my co-founder at this company, his name is also Adam. So we're just Adam and Adam. We keep it really simple. We're both engineers. So we came from the medical device space, and our background is in designing small, intricate mechanical mechanisms. Mm-hmm. And we got together in 2015 and decided that we wanted to start something on our own. So we took a look at what was happening in the razor market. It was actually really interesting. Dollar Shave Club, Harry's, these companies were coming out of the woodwork, and they were innovating on business models. So they're selling online, shipping direct to your house, all those great things.
Yep.
But they didn't make any innovation on the product side. Mm-hmm. It's the same type of product, disposable cartridge head, that Gillette's and Schick's have been selling for decades.
Yep.
So we thought, if we could actually innovate on the product itself, we could carve out a nice niche for ourselves and build some enterprise value for the business. And that's what got it started.
And so you actually designed this?
Yeah, fully designed in-house. My partner Adam is the primary engineer behind our company, so he sits in front of his computer and does the engineering and manufacturing.
Okay.
I handle the sales, marketing, customer support, and we're sitting here today in our operations warehouse here in Stonington, so all the kind of downstream after something's made for our business.
So I assume they're not made here because I don't see any manufacturing facility.
They are not made here. We have manufacturers over in Taiwan that make the handle and in Israel that make our blades.
Nice. So you manufacture in democratic countries.
That's right. Which is,
I hear a positive thing these days.
Yeah, it is a good thing. You know, it's always tricky in the global trade world, especially with the trade war with China, right? It's it's very topical. And, you know, honestly, the way we view it is it's a global trade economy. So we need to find our partners that make high quality product that can help us do it at the price that we need to, so we can deliver it into the market that accepts the price point that we can sell it for. Mm-hmm. So that's all part of the equation.
So have you had a challenge with educating people on a new concept?
Well, it depends on the customer that we're talking about. Safety razors, which are all metal razors that use these types of blades, but they're only single edge and they don't have a pivoting head. Mm-hmm. Those have been around since 1901. King Gillette invented the first one, right? So eponymous Gillette company. There's a hardcore group of folks who are really dedicated to what's called wet shaving and using these products. They don't need that much education about our product because they understand the blades. Understand the value proposition, and what we can offer them is another razor tool in their arsenal that provides for example, a quicker, easier shave for those mornings they don't want to spend the time doing the very technique-driven safety razor shaving. Mm-hmm. So that's an easy sell for us, and they're a really dedicated, interesting audience for our product. Now, on the other side, we've got people coming over from cartridge razors, and yes, those folks do require a significant amount of education around handling the blades. Is it safe?
Yep.
Around,
now, when you say cartridges, you mean like your Mach 3?
Yeah, exactly.
Dollar Shave Club.
Yeah, those plastic cartridges.
Okay.
And, you know, if they're coming over for whatever reason, they want a different shave, they have irritation, or they want to reduce their plastic reliance, we have to educate them on what we have here.
Mm-hmm. And how are you educating them?
Well, we have a pretty significant digital presence. So we have our website, which is, I think it's a beautifully designed and crafted website. We have a lot of information on there. And then we have a vibrant community on Instagram. We're approaching 10,000 followers there.
What's your Instagram?
It's @leafshave.
Okay.
We're @leafshave everywhere. And we do most of our posts there aren't like lifestyle posts of the razors in bathrooms, for example. They're educational posts.
Mm-hmm.
Here's why we made this decision on the design. Here's what this blade does. Here's how to use it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Much as I love looking at people's razors in their bathrooms.
It's a less common activity.
Yeah. I try not to ever look at razors in bathrooms. Not even my own.
Well, that would change with this.
Yes. It is a good looking razor. Definitely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And what's the website? Is it?
It's leafshave.com.
Leafshave. Okay. So people can see, because obviously they can't see it on the podcast.
No, that's right.
You can hold it up to the phone. They can listen to it, but I don't think it really makes sense.
I am holding it up to you now.
Yep. And it sounds beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. It's probably not really made for radio.
Not really.
but it is a really, really cool concept. And so the pricing model, as you told me, is kind of more front-loaded.
Yeah.
It's more expensive to buy the unit, but then it's less expensive over time?
That's right, exactly. We you know, basically, I laugh because Adam and I looked at each other and we said, let's make a product that takes probably the most successful business model in the last 100 years, the razor blade model. It's mm-hmm. Not just for razor blades. It is spread across many industries where you sell something up front at a loss. It's a loss leader. And then you keep people locked into your brand for ongoing forever, you know, exchange of blades at an elevated price. That's that business model. We said, let's take that, very successful, flip it on its head. Yeah, and ignore it.
Always good to avoid the success of the past.
Yeah. I know, right. Yeah. So instead we have an invest in an ROI type of model. So the hand itself costs $79, so mm-hmm. it's definitely an investment up front. With that, we do provide 40 blade edges, which probably yields most folks more than a year, roughly a year of shaving.
Okay.
So it's about an instant return on that investment, but it does require more capital up front. And the blades cost about one-tenth the price of cartridges, so around 10, 15 cents to replace your blades ongoing instead of $2 to $3 that you might buy them in the store for the Gillette type model razors. So it's definitely a long-term savings, and it's just a better made product up front.
So after that year, you're
yeah ahead exactly
of the game forever.
Yeah.
And is there any concern with you know, someone copying it or?
Yeah, it's always a concern. I'd say our defenses from a business perspective are the product wasn't easy to develop. Mm-hmm. It's some complex mechanical development in there. But the other piece is we have a patent pending on the tech that, mm-hmm. that defends the multiple blades in our pivoting head here. So assuming that will issue at some point, it's been pending for a couple of years, but
like it does,
hopefully yeah. issuing yep. soon. That'll be a nice defensive mechanism for us.
And your what do you call it, the handle?
Yeah. The handle, the razor.
The base unit. So that's not something someone could knock off because that would be a direct violation of your patent.
That's right.
If your blades fit into it, it would violate the patent. And they'd have to...
Yeah, well, actually, these blades aren't proprietary to us.
Okay.
So we make these blades in the standard double-edge blade shape, mm-hmm. of which there are dozens of manufacturers around the world. So we call it like an open blade model. You can use our blades if you like someone else's. Like, for example, Japan makes this brand called Feather Blades. They're really high quality. They cost more than ours. But some folks like to use those in their leaf razor instead. We're totally agnostic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So really the core thing you're selling is the handle and the quality of that handle.
That's right.
And so, you know, if you were to get a cheap knockoff, then you'd have a cheap knockoff.
Yeah. And you don't want a cheap knockoff shave experience.
Yes. Oh, that's definitely true. Yeah. 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 I haven't used a single blade razor in I don't know how many years because it's just not.
It can be tough.
Not a pleasant experience. Kind of like ripping it. I remember I used one of the electric razors and they had the lift and cut system.
Oh, right.
Which I called the lift and rip system because that's more what it felt like. It just kind of felt like it was ripping out of my face. I'm like, this is not better. I'll just grow a long beard like this.
Yeah.
This is not worth it.
I bet you could grow a pretty good wizard beard if you tried.
I probably could. Yeah. It does grow out pretty well. I've never gone past an inch or two before I'm like, this is getting a little bit long.
Someday.
Yeah, if I get like two knuckles in there, then it's probably too much beard. Now, you said you have there's another startup that you work with as well?
Yeah, so I would say that this company here is my side job passion,
okay.
Although it's growing quite big at this point. My day job is in the medical device area, so I've made my career in high technology in orthopedics, and so I'm currently working at a startup out in California where we're growing a technology to assist surgeons with placing knee and hip implants more accurately.
That sounds important, placing those accurately.
It is important. It's actually, it's not just important, it's a crisis, dare I say, in the U.S. The hip and knee implants secondary to cardiac surgery make up the biggest spend in Medicare from a government side. So finding ways to lower cost and be more efficient in that arena makes healthcare for everybody better, frankly.
That's one of the things. I think it happens a lot in startups where you hear about a solution and then you're terrified to realize there's a problem that needed that solution.
Yeah, I know.
You're like, wait, previously they were less accurate in placing joints?
Yeah, well, surprise, surprise, technology can make improvements. Now, what's key is that you make technology, certainly from the medical perspective, you make technology that doesn't replace the surgeon experience, but mm-hmm. you augment their skills and their training.
Right, that sounds like a really good thing. So is that's your main business?
That's my day job, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's what pays my bills, and it keeps me busy. That company is actually, I call it a startup, but it's quite big now. It's about 90 people we've grown to in the last few years.
And you own that company, or you're an owner?
I don't own that company. I'm executive leadership there. I run the marketing group. I'm part of a pod of people that came from our previous startup, and the board of this company brought us in to provide some new leadership and strategy direction.
And how did you get started? How did you get started up with these startups?
Well, I started up with these startups after grad school. I went to Carnegie Mellon for my business degree. Mm-hmm. I did a business and healthcare degree over there. And I, while at grad school, interned with a small company that was four people large called Blue Belt Technologies. And I just stuck with them after I graduated with my grad degree. And that company grew to 150 people, and it sold for almost $300 million in 2016.
That's a lot of dollars.
That's a lot of dollars. I didn't get all the dollars, but I was able to participate in the exit a little bit, which gave me a taste for startup life and mm-hmm. provided capital to start this business.
Okay. And then from there, you went to the...
That's right. And then I joined this other company a couple years ago, and then we've had a pretty wild ride there in scaling that.
Nice. And so this leaf shave is just you, just the Adams?
The Adams, and then my wife, April, works at this facility, and she does all of our fulfillment. So all of our packing and shipping. Okay. When an order comes in, prints the label out, she picks them, packs them, and ships them.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a strict A policy?
Just A just people can work at
only
our...
Only A people. That's
that's
good.
Right,
yeah. Yeah, they do often talk about like A, B, and C employees, but usually not that literally.
We're very literal over here. We all share one email address. It's just A at leafshave.com.
Hopefully that forwards, because someone's going to email that.
I kid.
Yeah. But, so Leaf, you said it's growing.
Yeah,
and
that's
so
right.
We'll eventually scale to be bigger and better.
Yeah, we have strong desire to. We're a bootstrap business. We haven't raised any money for this company.
Okay.
Like I said, we met both Adam and I worked at that previous startup, so that's where we met. So we both had enough funds to fund this business, and now we're profitable. So it's growing on the strength of its own profits and margin, which is always really nice. Subsequently, that means we're growing methodically and carefully. You know, we're not mm-hmm. going for hyper growth.
Yep.
We want to make sure it's a sustainable business. And how we do that is by both growing our direct channels online, which we've gotten quite good at, and then also opening up new channels like wholesale. So we've started working with retail brick and mortar partners that we sell our products to, and then they sell it to their customers.
Are there any places around here in Southeast Connecticut where someone can find?
Right now there is one, actually, a really cool shop in Lyme. I think Old Lyme, Greenhouse Beauty, Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Rachel's.
Oh, Rachel. Yeah. Yep. So great. So Rachel.
I should get her on the show at some point.
You should. She's wonderful. We went to high school together, actually.
Okay.
And she saw an article about us, reached out, and asked if she could carry. So she now carries our product. She's the only one in Southeast Connecticut right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're likely to onboard a few more in the coming months. We have a bit of a wait list.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that because of supply? Or?
Supply. Okay. It's you know, when you're growing a consumer product business, your biggest challenge is keeping the cash flow to inventory balance correct.
Right.
So because we pay up front for our inventory, it comes in and then it sells through. And so you've got this kind of imbalance for cash out to when I get the cash mm-hmm. in from customers. It's not a software business that can basically scale infinitely with server space. You
know,
this is something that requires careful attention.
And with your retail customers, they pay like Net 30 or Net 90 or
no, they prepay.
Oh, they prepay. Okay,
yeah.
So that way you're able to.
That is a nice piece.
All right, that's kind of with some businesses. That they'll, especially if you get into larger stores, they'll be like, yeah, we'll pay you when we feel like it.
Yeah, net 60, 90 is not uncommon in those situations. That's why we're sticking with smaller stores, and also, honestly, due to the high demand we have the ability to just accept prepaid customers.
That makes a lot of sense because, if all those bigger companies, I definitely net whenever we feel like it.
Exactly. That's scary.
Yeah. Net, you want to be in our store? We'll pay you when we want to.
Great. Well, then I'll just go out of business.
You'll show them.
Yeah.
Take that, big store. And as a Greenhouse Beauty is in, it's Old Lyme.
On Halls Road,
yes, yeah, right across from the Hideaway restaurant.
That's right, yeah.
Across the street from Big Y, for anyone familiar with.
I was just there last week. Lime area. We did a live Facebook cast with Rachel. And
nice.
I talked about the razors to her customers. And it's really fun to have someone local.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the great thing about her is she really knows her stuff in terms of, like, face science. I'm just going to call it face science.
Face science, kind of yeah. That's a thing. I mean, you and I may not be experts in this, but she certainly is.
I don't know what it's called. I'm calling it face science, but she seems to know a great deal about it. Faceology? Fasciology?
She's a face scientist.
Yeah, she's a fascist? No, wait.
Nope.
That is definitely not the
back
word.
It up.
Nope. When I talked to her, she was talking about, she was telling me something about how dry skin is, or oily skin is sometimes caused by being dry and the body trying to respond but not being able to.
Oh yeah, balancing
all that
pH and chemicals.
Yeah, and all that. So yeah, it's because so many people in the cosmetology field are like, this looks pretty.
Yeah,
put it on you.
Right,
and then your skin breaking out. I don't know why. I'll try putting some more stuff on your face.
Yeah.
And she really knows.
Yeah, because she's focused her product line on natural solutions, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
And that's a really nice fit for us. We have found a fantastic and fascinating audience in what they call, and we're calling, we're part of the world, is this zero waste community, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the concept of more sustainable solutions, better, well-made, longer-lasting products, and eliminating things like plastic waste from your consumption habits. And that's a really nice audience for us because there's not many places you can go for shaving that doesn't have plastic in the waste stream.
Yep. Yeah, and it seems like this is a really great thing because so often when people say, like, stop using straws, I'm like, well, I'm in the car like 6 hours a day. What do you want me to do? Just spill soda on myself?
Yeah.
You kind of need a straw to be able to interface with certain kinds of drinks in certain kinds of environments.
Absolutely.
But whereas this razor, and there's other technology solutions do the same thing, that actually solve it by eliminating the desire to do it. Like, this is just better. And now you don't have to worry about plastic. It costs the same.
And I should say that, like, the eliminating plastic is an amazing byproduct of our product, but it also starts with a fantastic shave.
Yes.
So it just gives a elevated shave experience, mm-hmm. too. So
yeah, and it's got a good heft to
table
it.
Table stakes.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely a very good thing. So thank you very much for being on the podcast.
Absolutely.
And let's remind the people, what is your website again?
Oh, it's leafshave.com, and we are also on Instagram at leafshave. My name again is Adam, and if you write us an email or drop us a note on Instagram, I'll be there on the other end. Always happy to meet our neighbors.
There you go. Here's the guy right here. Starting up an exciting startup business right here in North Stonington, hidden in this little industrial park.
It's fun to be a part of it.
It's super exciting. Well, thank you very much for being on the show, Adam.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
That was such a fun interview to do. There's so many startups you hear about. Of course, you hear about all the big successful startups because that's who rises to the top and who makes it into the podcast.
Sure.
But you don't often run across them. So when you meet someone who's like, I've got a startup, you're like, oh, cool. What's your startup? Well, I've got this idea and I'm in my garage and I'm kind of working on some things, but like they don't really have anything.
Right.
And I met Adam some time ago through Foundry 66. Which is the co-working space up in Norwich.
Oh, yeah. I've heard about that place.
Yeah, and he was kind of working on this. And he'd mentioned, starting phase, like, oh, I'm working on this shaver thing. And I was kind of like, okay, yeah, sure, startup idea, whatever. And then he actually hosted a business 4 hours for the Mystic Chamber. And that's where I talked to him about being on the show. And he had it at his space, which is basically, it's a not a warehouse space, big, empty industrial space.
And he's making them there.
No, they're made in, I think he said in the interview, but they're made in some faraway land, China or France or the moon or something.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah, so they're produced elsewhere, but he does all the shipping and fulfillment and whatnot. But he and his partner actually designed them.
Cool.
And then they found manufacturing to actually produce them. But it's a real legit business. It's full of actual goods that are being sold to actual people for actual money. I mean, it's not one of those, you know, $1 million of funding kind of startups.
Well, I mean, it could be at some point.
Yeah, but it's a bootstrap startup, so he's growing slow and steady, which is really a much better way to start a business, because when you pile a lot of money in there, there's a lot of combustible material in the mix there.
Ooh, I like the way you put that.
Yeah, because there's a lot more people involved, a lot of, you know, higher tension, and you know, some of these startups that have $20 million of capital might have 40 or 50 investors.
Oh, and that's a lot of people to please.
Yep, and they all want their money. They all want their exit.
Yeah.
So you either have to go public, which then makes it highly dynamic.
Right.
Or you need to make $1 zillion and they
like
still want your
like
public.
Immediately.
Yep. Yeah. Or sell. Right. Or sell to someone and get the $1 zillion. So by doing it the way he's doing it, that it gives him flexibility to, you know, run it properly and think long term and, you know, really the way business should be.
Yeah.
The financial industry has kind of deformed the whole business concept in that way. So it is great to, you know, great to get to meet someone who just has a good idea and is executing it and getting out there. And it was great about it too. Because at first I'm like, wait, so how is this different? I don't get it. And then
oh,
I realized.
Very different.
Yep. And then I realized, oh, okay. Yeah. Because I mean, I do shave, although not very much. Because if anyone's seen pictures of me.
You got I mean, you shave
mostly
the neck,
a beard,
a little bit on the cheeks, probably.
Yeah.
You shave,
yeah. But I don't think about it much.
Yeah,
as I mentioned in the interview, I do Dollar Shave Club because it's cheap and easy.
Yeah,
and I actually don't use shaving cream. I just shave in the shower. And
I used to do the same thing.
Yep. Done. Like every 3 or 4 days when I feel like it or remember. That's the great thing about having a beard.
Yeah,
is if you forget to shave for 4 days, it doesn't look like you're sloppy. It just looks like Oh, your beard's a little bigger.
Yeah, I only shave like once a month now because the Navy makes me.
Yeah.
I'm a reservist, so I only have to do it once a month. But when I was active duty, I had to shave every day.
Yep.
And that's when I made the switch to an actual safety razor, which is just one blade. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, technically, it's a double-sided blade.
Right, right.
So I can flip it over and use the other side, but it's one blade is touching my face at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you showed me this guy's product, this is really kind of innovative. I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
Where he's essentially breaking a safety razor double-edged blade in half.
Mm-hmm.
You just snap it in half. They're easy to snap.
Yep.
And then you put it into this device. I've never seen anybody do that before.
Yeah, and it's a really, really clever. And it's got a good heft to it.
Of course. So, yeah, I
you
would
know,
imagine.
Plastic razor weighs nothing.
That's what I love about mine is it's got some weight to it. I actually feel like I'm doing something, mm-hmm. You know, and I don't even have to work that hard.
Yeah.
I let the weight take care of it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So it's a really and very durable device,
mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's the kind of thing you buy once, and 20 years from now you're still using the same, the same thing. So it's really nice that way, and you don't have to worry about, you know, your cat getting into the cartridge you threw away and scratching out their paws.
Right.
With the I told the story in the interview. This is where we give a lie to the fact that you don't actually listen to the interview.
That's true.
Because as I tell you what the listener just listened to 10 minutes ago.
I don't get a notification when you post them.
Yeah, I show up to record, and you're like, so there's an interview?
Yeah, really? I thought we were doing it. No, whatever.
Okay.
I'm going to listen to this one for sure.
Yep. But yeah, I told the story about how my wife found little spots of blood on the bathroom floor.
Oh,
and
no.
Figured out the cat must have been playing with the trash and got one of the cartridges. And, I mean, he was fine. I didn't know. Other than the little spots of blood, but I think he probably nicked himself. And
yeah, those little cuts hurt.
Yep.
Yeah.
So.
Ooh, those little slices.
So yeah, I now like bury the cartridges in the trash, but it's better to not have to do that.
You know, they used to put them in the walls.
Yes.
When you would open the vanity, there would be like a little slot behind the mirror,
mm-hmm.
that you just dump it in.
and if our car collectors don't go anywhere, like you just fill the wall
you
with
just
razor
fill
blades.
Fill the wall with razor blades. Yep.
Yeah, because they're so small that you can. Put on it, yeah. With Leaf, it comes with a little box for disposing your blades.
Oh,
and
interesting.
Like you'll fill that box for 2 years.
Wow!
And then you mail it in. They take care of it. Or I think.
Oh, really?
I think you can just recycle it too. But if you don't have anything to do with it, you can send it back and.
Wow.
And they take care of it.
See, with mine, I get my blades in packs of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I pull one out and I open it out of the, you know, it comes wrapped in wax paper. There's 10 per pack, and when I pull the old one out. There's a little slot at the bottom of the plastic pack,
okay.
That I can shove it in. So I fill it up with the old ones, and then once the new ones are, you know what I mean, they replace, mm-hmm. I one for one swap. And then when I've got a 10 pack full of old razors, I just throw that away.
Okay, the idea here is, and of course they come in cardboard, so there's actually no plastic involved in the whole process.
Oh, even better.
Yep,
Yeah, because if you're getting them in a plastic container,
yeah,
and then you throw the plastic container right. over the steel inside, right. like, you haven't actually done anything to help the waste stream with that. So, but no, it's
dude, I'm gonna look into this.
Yeah, but it was really interesting to get to meet someone who's really kind of executed an idea like that. You know, of course, with Best Virgin Media, I get to see a really well executed idea. But by the time I've joined, it is in execution. Yeah. It is already
right.
well running along in a fairly large company. But to see that his company is basically three people at this point. So right here in New London County.
That's great.
And that's what's amazing. How many businesses there are that you drive by and have no idea they're there because they're nondescript warehouses and you know, these industrial parks. And people say, "Oh, there's no business in Southeast Connecticut. There's no manufacturing." And then behind some unmarked door is I met with a guy who does carbon fiber furniture.
Carbon fiber furniture,
yeah, which is not inexpensive. But
I was
going to
say
impressive.
It's probably really expensive.
Yeah, but it's like beautiful and practically indestructible.
Oh yeah,
yeah, and so yeah,
and lightweight.
Yeah. So that's there's that. I met with someone who does piano repair in one of those nondescript. Yeah, one of those nondescript warehouses. So, I mean, just so many amazing little businesses hidden in the nooks and crannies of our area here.
I love that, though.
Which is very impressive.
We need more of that.
We do, yes. Yeah, man, that is what things like Foundry 66 and it used to be Cure Commons, I believe it's BioCT, now are so good for is they give people a place to incubate a business. And one of the challenges is you're incubating a business, but then how do you make the connections you need to make? And those co-working spaces let people actually come together and connect and share resources and can be a really, really powerful thing.
Interesting. So, I mean, with the co-working space, though, is everybody kind of on the same level? I mean, to varying degrees, right? They're kind of all in a startup-esque area,
not necessarily, because there's some people
some
who
established
are
established folks in
yeah,
there.
Yeah, some people who are established.
Because I mean, I would imagine if you're established, you won't necessarily need a co-working. You have your own space.
Although it depends on what you're doing. Like Molly Bruno, for example, who I had on a couple episodes ago. Yep, she's out of Foundry 66.
I didn't know that.
I believe she actually introduced me to Adam in the first place.
Huh.
Yeah. So, but yeah, she's there because she needs an office, and she'd rather have an office where there's some life and energy. Than an office in a nondescript hallway. Because, yeah, if you go to a lot of those places where you can get a single office,
right.
it's you go down a depressing hallway.
Yeah.
Because it's a public hallway.
Right.
So there's no decorations or there's some generic corporate art.
Right. You've got a little placard next with your business name next to the elevator.
Yep. And the hallway's almost always silent.
Yeah.
And every door is closed.
Yep.
And it's like white paint and, it looks like something out of a movie about how depressing corporate life is.
Yeah.
For most of these kinds of buildings. So the co-working spaces have an energy to them. You open your door, you see someone walking by, there's maybe a conversation going on out there. There's a water cooler that you can hang out at and chat with people.
But it's not her own office, though, is it?
Well, she has her own, like, when she closes the door, she's inside her own space.
Yeah, but somebody else can use it while she's not there, right?
No, that's her own office.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so in co-working space, you actually have that's kind of the most expensive, the premium level.
Okay.
And at the lower level is the like hot desking,
right?
$75 a month kind of thing where you can.
Well, Foundry 66, this is pretty, it's a big space, isn't it?
Yeah. And they're actually doubling in size. Well, not, they've actually already doubled. They got the upstairs.
Oh, wow.
As well. And I think they may be expanding further into the building. I'm not sure.
That's insane.
But yeah, they're working on having they're adding their media center, which they need to put, hopefully, have soundproofing by now.
Some sound treatment in there, yeah.
Yeah, but they're adding the media center, and they've got conference rooms.
They can hire me. I'll build it for them.
Yeah, there we go. But so it's got all those kinds of resources. Plus, they have events. They have different speakers and presenters come in to talk to the members. There's a lot of value you get. And for the most part, those having a standalone office in a co-working space costs about the same as sometimes less. Than having it in a regular office building or whatever, but it's so much more value.
Oh yeah,
because you're all together, and it often costs less because it's more efficient.
And you know what I just thought about? Like if she's meeting clients in there, who knows what those people are going to need?
Mm-hmm.
Like they could be walking around going to her office and going, "Oh, I could use, I don't know who else would be working there, but
yep, Well, yeah, there's tend to be like graphic designers, videographers, you know, the kind of people who work alone and don't want to work from home.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to work from home.
Yes. That it is.
It's hard to stay motivated.
Yes. That can definitely be a challenge. Well, the key is...
I mean, the only reason why I'm wearing pants right now is because you're here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate you making the sacrifice. The key to staying that motivated when you don't have someone kind of looking over your shoulder is having a system and a schedule.
Yeah.
Because that's definitely what helps.
Right.
Helps me is I've got, you know, I start at a certain time, roughly. I kind of have a, green, yellow, red start time. Like, I really should start at 8.
Yeah.
If I start at 8:30, that's okay. And 9 is good enough.
Yep.
If I start at 9, I still have a good 8-hour day. If I start at 8, I have a 9-hour day. So I kind of aim for 8, and then, you know, family stuff happens, and then Rowan and this and that, then be like, I started at 8:45.
But you got to fit the gym in there sometime. Good.
I do try to do that. Mm-hmm. I've not been doing that as much as I was hoping to. And I
feel like I've been seeing you post about it a lot.
Yeah,
still.
I'm there at least once or twice a week.
Yeah.
But I was trying to be there more.
Yeah.
The last time I went, I went because I was really feeling the difference in my energy level for not going.
Oh, your energy had dropped down?
Yeah.
That's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, also, I'm at that, like, right on the edge of in shape versus out of shape. So.
Just got to keep pushing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm not far from out of shape. Yeah. So if I forget for 2 weeks, like,
it's gone.
And I'm done. So it's good to, I need to get out there. But the great thing is with Anytime Fitness, I can just go there anytime.
Yeah.
And, you know, 10, 15 minutes on the bike. And
I mean, yeah.
And I get a good, you know, good workout and feeling good again for a little while. So it's a really good thing. So I guess I will give my recommendation at this point.
Rocking.
So my recommendation is a non-business related podcast.
I'm excited about this
one. But I think that people really enjoy the podcast. It's from a company called Wondery. It's called Tides of History. And actually, the story of how I found it is kind of interesting. I listened to some of the Gimlet podcasts, including Startup. And on Startup, they had a guest podcast, kind of like we did with Behind the Studs.
Right.
And except Gimlet's a little bit bigger.
Just a little bit.
So they had a guest podcast of a podcast called Business Wars.
Okay.
Which I listened to. It's like, oh, this sounds interesting. And Business Wars is all about these major competitions between business, like Coke versus Pepsi or Ford versus Chevy or those kinds of things. So I listened to that. And then on Business Wars, they had a promotion for another history podcast called American History Tellers. So I listened to that. And that's kind of the same format as Business Wars, of these 5-6 episode arcs on different elements of American history.
Cool.
And from there, I heard about Tides of History, where they said the whole concept of is kind of tying it all together. So listening to something about 700 years ago and tying it to the present.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I was thinking that would be something more explicitly like, and that's how this ties into the present.
Right.
But it doesn't. It actually does something even better, which is it ties it to other things around it so that you can draw your own conclusions to the present.
Is it like just showing parallels?
It's mostly just telling stories, but the stories are related. So like it told the story of the rise of the Ottoman Empire and the fall of Constantinople. And then it had another episode about Vlad Tepes. I can't do an Eastern European accent.
Yeah.
Dracula.
Yeah.
Which Dracula.
Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah. Dracula, interestingly, means son of the dragon.
Huh.
Because that was Vlad III is the one we know as Dracula. Vlad II, his father, was known as the dragon because he joined an order of knights called the Order of the Dragon.
Which one was the Impaler?
Vlad III.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the one, yeah.
Yep. But it's very interesting to learn kind of the background of that. And then from there, it actually goes to the War of the Roses, which is related because at that time, there were no structures of state.
Okay.
The state was the king. So if the king was weak, the state didn't exist necessarily.
Interesting.
Yeah, so the state wasn't, you know, in our modern world, we're used to the idea of like, oh, there's a weak president, then okay, the country's going to wobble for a bit, but the institutions are so strong it could survive multiple bad presidents.
Yeah, we'd be fine.
And still the country would be okay.
Yeah.
Whereas the War of the Roses was caused by a weak king. Henry VI was literally incapable of making decisions. And So people had to step up, but because there was no mechanism for succession of a living king,
right,
and there was no way for someone to kind of make the decisions for him and be accepted, that created open war. But that kind of civil war is kind of how they solved problems back then. But it's really interesting to listen to it and then compare it and say, oh, that's why that works the way it does, and then compare it to the modern world.
I see.
And it creates some really, really interesting connections. But so the podcast is called
I'm gonna ask a question real quick before you move on.
Yes.
Are they mentioning this type of parallel to today?
No, they kind of leave it to the listener.
They just kind of let you find your way to that.
Yeah, but interesting. But it definitely think, you know, politics and religion are things that are somewhat relevant today.
Oh, yeah,
and so you draw that conclusion like, interesting. But so it's called Tides of History by Wondery. And the host is Patrick Wyman. And you can find it on any, wherever fine podcasts are sold or listened to.
Downloaded? Streamed?
I think you want to go to the website. Unfortunately, I haven't actually gone to the website. And they keep referring back to their 100 Years War episode, which is not in their stream.
What?
So I can't get it. And I tried to go to their website from my phone, and it didn't load well, and I haven't had the chance to go on my computer.
Well, that's annoying.
So, yeah, they keep being like, and as you heard in our 100 Years War episode, I'm like, no, Patrick, no, I didn't hear
it. No, I didn't hear that.
Because that's...
Was it like a really old episode?
The stream starts in September of last year, so I don't know what that is. But it's worth doing that little quirk. But it's really interesting just kind of tying all those things in, because there's so many things you assume you know, like the idea of witch hunting.
Right.
It talks about that, and one place he starts with, because he's really good at putting you into that place, like, what did people know at that time? What were people thinking at that time?
Good.
And so with witch hunting, for example, he says, okay, to start, everybody agreed, the commoners, nobles, everybody agreed magic existed, was common, and we knew how to do it. So if you start from that standpoint, the idea of witch hunting makes a lot more sense.
Sure.
It's kind of like, you know, everybody agrees guns exist, and so the idea there's people out there whose job it is to track down people who hurt people with guns is pretty reasonable.
That's pretty reasonable, yeah.
If 500 years from now, somehow we determine that guns didn't really exist, then homicide detectives would seem really weird.
Yeah, I'd be like, well, why were they doing that?
Yeah, but at that time, the idea of magic, that you could do some ritual or burn some herb or whatever to get a better harvest or to become more fertile or whatever, that was just totally acceptable.
It was acceptable. Like, yeah, everybody believed that.
Right,
yeah,
totally. And so then the step of, well, if you can use it for good, you can use it for evil. So we should have people who make sure it's not evil. And then, fun fact, the book that popularized the idea of witch hunters, Maleficarius Maleficorum or something like that. It translates to witch's hammer.
Huh.
But it's the book that once it got around, people were like, oh, that's how you do it. And it was basically a how-to guide for hunting witches. It told you how to try them, how to detect them, what they looked like, what they did. It was created
naturally. I mean, you would write that book if you really believed that this needed to happen.
Yep. You would especially write that book if you were a witch hunter that nobody listened to because people thought that you were overly obsessed with hunting witches and thought that you needed to kind of calm down a little bit because witches weren't as common as you thought they were. So it was a failed witch hunter wrote this book to be like, you guys don't understand how serious this problem is. And then everybody read the book and said, oh my goodness,
this is a very serious problem.
There's witches everywhere. We need to start burning more people.
So it worked.
Yeah, so it was basically a conspiracy theorist wrote a book that caught on.
And he made a bunch of money.
I don't think he made a lot of money necessarily, but at least he achieved his goals of becoming, you know, of getting everyone, you know, looking out for the danger of witches.
Wow.
He really just succeeded in getting hundreds or thousands of people killed, you know, innocent people killed.
Wow.
But he felt like he was doing a really good thing.
Well, good for him.
So, yeah, it's... But it's interesting to see that and be like, oh, but it's such a relevant thing.
Right.
Like, you know, compare him to the guy who popularized the idea that vaccines are dangerous.
Right.
That maybe given the benefit of the doubt that he thought he was doing something good, he may not have been. But but the same kind of idea, popularized an idea and it takes went around off. The world.
It does what it does.
And everyone's like, hey, that sounds reasonable. I read this great book. So that's where witch hunting came from. But no, it's a really good series. It gives you a lot of that kind of background and understanding kind of how the politics work and why they were. And it's interesting to think even the 14th, 15th century, this idea of states as we know them didn't exist.
Right.
And then you think, well, why would they? You know, why do states exist the way they do now? It's because for hundreds of years they have. it's worked pretty well for us, so we all agree we'd kind of like to keep them.
Doesn't that kind of work with the economics too?
To some degree. Economics kind of is its own self-balancing system. But politics, on the other hand, you look at it, you got a lot of people out there be like, burn it all down and everything's so terrible.
Right.
Not realizing, you learn a little bit of medieval history and you're like, I don't think you want to burn it all down.
No.
Because all these social justice things you're worried about, those go out the window if you don't have this very delicately balanced system that holds our society together.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's problems, but it's way better than 100 years ago worlds better than 500 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no one was worrying about women's rights in 1450.
Right. Nope.
Not at all.
Nope. Maybe the women were.
Yeah, but basically, if you couldn't raise an army and defend your rights, you didn't have them.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, the idea of intrinsic rights was just not a thing. It was, and everything was settled by raising an army and fighting a battle.
Yeah, and the king could just decide.
Yeah. Well, actually, the kings were much, much weaker than you'd think.
Really?
Yeah, the king was as powerful as they could enforce.
That's true.
Because there's no central power.
Right, exactly.
And it was constantly in flux. And people respected that there was a king and he was king, but not much beyond that. So the king's like, you should give me taxes. Then things kind of wear that phrase, you and what army?
Yeah. Yeah.
You should give me taxes. Nah, I'm not feeling that.
Not today.
Don't think so. I got a few friends here and you have what seems like less friends, so I'm going to say no.
Wow.
Yeah, and, very dynamic situation. Also, interestingly, in the Middle Ages, it was totally acceptable for, an English noble to have French lands and get a Spanish pension and have a German title.
Huh.
So it wasn't, this idea of internal and external politics didn't exist. There was just politics. Just Whoa. Did what you did. So it's very dynamic and complicated. And
I never thought about that.
Yep. And, the English king is trying to make peace with France, but this key noble is married to this Spanish princess.
Right.
And France is fighting with Spain, and they don't want to make peace. So, and there's hundreds of nobles in every kingdom.
Oh, every version of everything. So you got to sort it all out.
Yeah. So take Game of Thrones. And then make it much more complicated.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because Game of Thrones is in Westeros in a vacuum.
Right.
Westeros is no other countries.
Right.
Imagine if there was three other Westeroses next to Westeros and they were all doing the same thing. That's the 15th century.
I was going to say, spoiler alert, but I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say anything.
So, maybe there are. But the War of the Roses was partly because there was stuff happening in France and stuff happening in Spain and stuff happening in other places that was all tying together and making it all crazy. And so it makes you, it kind of puts things in perspective. So we often look at our own challenges and say, wow, this is the worst challenge we've ever seen. And then you look at history and say,
well, maybe it's not so bad.
Maybe it's not so bad. And things were totally different. And because you think, there's kind of a general progression. Things are pretty much getting better decade by decade.
Oh, yeah.
To some degree. I mean, the economy's up and down and this and that. But there's a pretty linear progression.
Yeah.
Whereas for most of history,
it's been pretty rough.
There is no linear progression. Someone does a great job for 30 years, he dies, his son's an idiot, and all his work's undone.
Right.
Genghis Khan created, I believe, the largest empire in the world, lasted for his lifetime.
A lot of kids.
Yep. Lasted for his lifetime, then got split into like 13 different smaller countries.
Right.
The Ottoman Empire, the way that, I don't know what happened later, but at least early on, the way they had succession was there wasn't a rule like the oldest son becomes the sultan.
Okay.
It was one of the sons becomes the sultan.
So how do we decide?
The one who wins.
Death.
Yep. Yeah. So sometimes one of them, one of them, when the sultan died, the more assertive son called the other one to his tent and had him strangled.
Wow.
He's like, you're dead, and now I'm sultan.
Wow.
And if they didn't happen to be in the same place, civil war for 10 years.
And it's funny because I've been hearing this, at least on Joe Rogan's podcast, I'm sure I've been hearing, maybe Sam Harris has said something about it, but it's, everybody's saying the same thing. Like, there's almost no better time in history to be alive
mm-hmm.
than right now. As bad as we think we have it, it's really not that bad.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's safer, it's longer lifespans, more wealth.
Yeah.
And so you can work on you can make things like podcasts and
yeah.
And also the other thing too is think about like the podcast and social media world. the way we communicate so freely could not have existed most times in history.
No.
Because it would have resulted in immediate, constant violence.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the things people say on Facebook, you know, when you hear about things like swatting and whatnot, that is a glimmer of what it would have been like any other time in history.
Right.
You say something nasty on Facebook, they will find you and kill you.
Yeah.
Or challenge you.
Right.
Wouldn't necessarily just be find you and kill you. They might find you and challenge you to a duel.
Exactly.
And then kill you.
And then kill you.
Yeah. But is, and so now, you know, the idea that there isn't that kind of conflict, that we live in such a civilized society that you can offend someone and they won't try to kill you. That's a pretty new concept.
They're going
to
get really mad at you and all kinds of other things.
And then they'll say other nasty things on the internet.
Right, right.
With their keyboard.
Yeah, that's right, keyboard
warriors. Clackety, clackety, clack. Yeah. But that's not quite as bad as being like, I demand satisfaction. Yeah. Pistols at dawn.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little bit different.
We haven't been living in that for very long either. I mean, you think about the Old West here in the United States, like, that wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, duels continued until the middle of the 19th century.
Yeah, exactly. See?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually
take them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was listening to another, I think it was a podcast. I met Andrew Jackson, and apparently he had a duel in which he was shot in the chest.
He came out okay?
Yeah, because Andrew Jackson's really badass.
Wow.
Not as badass as...
$10 bill, y'all.
Not as badass at 20.
He's 20?
He's the 20, yeah.
Who's the 10?
The 10 is Hamilton.
Hamilton's a 10?
Yes.
I got my duels mixed up.
I think, right? Yeah, pretty sure Jackson's 20.
I don't have a
20. Okay, now I don't remember. Yeah, I only have fives and ones.
Oh, no. I don't have my wallet with me.
I'm pretty sure Jackson's 20.
I'm pretty sure you're right. Jackson is a 20, now that I think about it. Who's on the 10?
The Hamilton.
Is it Hamilton?
Yep.
All right.
The $10 founding father.
Yeah.
It's a line from Hamilton.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense now.
Yep. Yeah, but Teddy Roosevelt's the really... I believe it's Teddy Roosevelt who was attacked by an assassin, shot, and then proceeded to disarm and subdue his assassin with his bare hands.
Dude's a beast.
After being shot.
Yeah, dude's a beast.
Yeah.
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 I want to grow up to be Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, he was pretty... he had his issues, too. He had a bit of an ego.
Sure.
But he was...
That's fine.
He was a pretty, pretty badass president.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, he was quite impressed. I remember watching Air Force One, and, because Harrison Ford's character, and that's a pretty badass president. And I can't remember who the president at the time, but whoever it was, part of the reason the movie came out was it was...
I bet it was Clinton, wasn't it?
It's either Clinton or Bush.
It was in the 90s, it would have been Bush or Clinton.
But the movie came out at a time when Americans wanted a tougher president. And so they wanted to watch a movie about a president fighting terrorists by himself with his bare hands. being all sneaky and tricky. Because we have had a series of presidents who could not defend themselves against terrorists with their bare hands.
No.
Maybe Reagan could.
Oh, yeah. Reagan was scrappy.
Yeah, he was a scrappy guy.
And he was in the military.
Yeah. Was he?
Yeah.
All right.
I think.
Yeah, Carter would have had like a nice little prayer circle with him.
Although George W. was in the military.
He was?
I believe, briefly. National Guard, I think. Air National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And his dad was in the military, too. He was a pilot.
Yeah, well, his dad was a war hero.
Yeah.
Like, quite respectably.
Was Reagan in the military? I thought he was. I know he was an actor.
He's definitely an actor.
I thought he got drafted for some...
He definitely
played
a lot of roles that were military roles.
Damn.
So there's a lot of photos of him in uniform, I'm sure.
I'm terrible at history. Have you noticed?
Yes. Yes, this is definitely an entertaining episode that provides no educational value.
Especially presidential history. I'm awful at presidential history.
Yeah, so hopefully people listen to this episode and be like, I wish I could learn some actual history. No, I'm going to go over listen to Tides of History and stop listening to Guy Who Knows a Guy in this episode where he talked nothing about networking, business, and marketing, or anything I came here to listen to. I want my money back. Fortunately, it's free. So
I'll give you your money back. It's fine.
Yeah, yes, I will offer 100% refund on whatever you paid to listen to this episode.
Whatever you paid us
to listen to this episode. Yeah,
you're paying your service provider.
Yeah, if you're
to
paying
download something.
If you're paying someone for this episode, contact me because I'm really curious why you're paying to listen to something I'm giving you for free. That is weird.
Technically, you could make the argument you're paying your cell phone provider. Or
yeah,
whoever.
I guess so. Yeah.
So a couple cents.
But we'll make up for this in the same recording session by recording another couple chapters of the book.
Oh, yeah.
So people can listen to the book in audio format. So after listening to us ramble on about various history facts that I sort of know because I listened to a podcast once, I'm not a historian, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
That's awesome.
but we have fun. And that's what matters. It's fun. So I'm gonna call it here. But this has been a great episode.
It has been a good episode.
It has been fun and totally not educational. So there you go. And enjoy your relaxation. This like school vacation kind of episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of that pesky learning stuff that's for knowledge. None of that.
None of that.
I'm just going to make stuff up that might be historical, and then you can listen to a real podcast about actual history. So I'm Michael Whitehouse, your host, the guy who knows a guy. My website is guywhoknowsaguy.com. If you don't listen to my, all right, not listen, you don't subscribe to my email list, you should, because it tells you about all the upcoming networking events here in Eastern Connecticut. My co-host and producer is Patrick Howard of Four Unicorns Design. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful day. JV Connect is coming up quick, December 12th and 13th. If you are looking for a networking event where you can meet people who aren't looking to just pitch you or take, but actually want to collaborate, build strategic partnerships, joint ventures, maybe even find some mentors, some coaches, people to support you, accountability partners, who knows? If you're looking for good people in an environment that's not stressful, but is set up to give you a lot of great connections in an efficient amount of time, check out JV Connect. jv-connect.com. That's jv-connect.com. December 12th and 13th, 2023. We'll see you there.